This episode of Well Met is brought to you in partnership with Legion by Lenovo and Intel. Find out more about Legion by Lenovo on Facebook and Twitter at Legion by Lenovo.
We're almost there. Quiet down, everyone. This is not like any of our previous expeditions. This will be far more ambitious.
You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 108 of Well Met. We're a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. Today is May 8th, 2017. From Denver, Colorado, I'm John Horstman. With me, of course, is the crew. First, let's head over to Baton Rouge, Louisiana with our very own Tannen Grace. What's up, Tannen?
Hey John, how's it going? Ready to talk about some Hearthstone.
We got lots of Hearthstone to talk about this week, but let's jump over to Kansas City with one of his many Kansas City hats. It's J.R. Cook. Hey.
Hey, John. Going to be another fun week. Lots to talk about with the game. Lots of good conversation this week, I think. So I'm really excited for this episode.
Yeah, this week is definitely going to be a free-flowing week as far as our conversations go. So I'm really excited about that. Before we jump in and talk about our weeks in Hearthstone and all that good stuff, I do want to take a brief second to adjust this window just because that's a thing that we do now, and talk about our Patreon really quick. We're actually making some changes to our Patreon for June. Currently, how we've been doing the show is we've been doing it on a monthly support basis. We're actually going to be changing that to a weekly support basis. And by weekly, we mean per episode. Basically, we just feel bad if we miss an episode, people still pay for it. And that just doesn't seem right. And we probably should have done that from the beginning. We didn't. So if you are a supporter of the show or you're thinking about it, just know that those changes are going to be going into effect soon. I'm going to have a blog post up later this week about all the specifics of what that'll look like. And then we'll start going on a per episode basis. Don't worry, Patreon lets you limit the amount of times you can post an episode. We're not going to do a daily show or anything crazy like that. So we'll have a limit of like 5 per month and all that stuff. So that's going to be coming soon for Patreon. Stay tuned there. And of course, head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. If you like the show, want to support, might as well do this now. Thanks to our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, Corell, and Variatus. Thank you so much for your support of the show. We love you all and hope to chat with you guys soon. All right, let's talk about our weeks in the world of Hearthstone. It's a new season and the climb is up. We got JR versus Tannen this month because they ended in a draw last month. So naturally
with an asterisk with JR winning.
Yeah, but that doesn't feel good to me. So what I want to do is I want to just do a whole new scratch it all, talk about our weeks and see who's winning. JR, first, tell us about your week in Hearthstone.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Bloodthorn for subscribing to us on Twitch with his Twitch Prime real quick. So I just saw that come across. But as far as Hearthstone goes, I haven't had a chance to play as much as I would have liked this week. I've been trying to find a deck. Like last month I played Burn Mage, right? So I'm like, okay, this month I want to find something else to play and rank up with. And I'm just having issues trying to find something that I can work with. And I couldn't get anything working. I tried Paladin. I tried Druid. I went back to Burn Mage, and it's winning. So that's what I'm sticking with right now. That's what I'm gonna play this season. Not sure if I'm gonna try to hit Legend this month though. There's just a lot going on with work and other stuff that I spent so much time on Hearthstone last month that I don't know if I'm going to be a tryhard this month. I might just hit Dad Legend and call it good.
All right. Way to make this this month's competition feel valuable and invested.
Yeah.
Fair
Unfortunately,
enough.
That's the way it goes.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Tannen, what about you, man? What have you been up to in Hearthstone?
Well, as for the competition, just go ahead and lock it up for me, John, because I will be making Legend again this month. That's something that's just going to happen. As for playing Hearthstone so far this week, kind of in the same boat as JR, didn't play a lot on the ladder, had a couple series that I had to play, including the one that I'm a teammate with JR. What's the name of the league again? It always escapes me, JR.
Team Hearth League.
Team Hearth League. Yeah, always see the THL. I forgot the whatever. THL. Anyway, so JR wins this week by just winning a game because I got 3-0'd in meme-tastic fashion very quickly in my match. So that kind of soured me on Hearthstone for a day or two. But I'm kind of in the same boat JR is. You know, I'm like trying to figure out which deck to play with but it's the other way around for me. I just want to play all of them. You know, like we've seen these new decks popping up here or there that are good or like kind of good, and I want to find out for myself. So I'm going to be working pretty hard this week and trying to figure out my lineup. Because I'll be playing my match for this week, say Saturday or Sunday, sometime like as late as possible. But I'm also going to be pestering JR for the next few days in personal DMs because I'm going to get all over his butt about winning this week because he and I are both going to win our matches and we're going to come with really solid lineups this week too. So we're going to be getting some practice in.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you guys are having fun in your leagues at least. I'm up to rank 6. I did it with Elemental Priest. Ooh. Elemental Priest. It was it was a deck that was kind of circulating around some pro players that I stole from. That's usually where I get my deck list because I try to get them a few days in advance because as soon as it's on the competitive Hearthstone subreddit, it just the viability of it goes down quite a bit. And so ground up to rank 6 really quick. Almost to Dad Legend, but I doubt that I will have any time to play this next week. I've got family coming into town, graduating, and all that good stuff. So it's going to be kind of an interesting week. You guys are going to have to write the show notes for next week. Good luck. Have fun. And yeah,
it's going to be really simple. It's going to say like Hearthstone, and then like more Hearthstone. There we go. Show notes. We're done.
Go ahead. We're going to do that. And then next week, right into the show and let us know how you felt like that show went.
Let me host it. We'll be great.
All right. Fair enough, dude. You can, I will hand you that host button so quickly.
You still have the buttons though.
No button pushing for me. So I did that, but I also actually got back into Destiny this week. With Destiny 2 coming out in September, I want to get back into it, get current, get up on all the lore. And so I've been spending a lot of time doing that in the mornings, usually like 3 or 4 hours in the morning, and then doing like 4 or 5 hours of Overwatch in the afternoon, and then usually an hour or two of Hearthstone in the evening. It's nice and methodical right now.
Your life sounds so difficult. Your average day, like how do you make it through the day, John?
You know what? It's not easy. It's not like it's been so long since I felt like I could just sit down and play a game for fun. It's like every time
I get that.
I need to do this for the podcast. I need to do this. I want to work on a YouTube video or maybe have another project that I've got coming up that I'm not saying anything about yet. All that stuff factors into it. It's just like a regular job for me, man, except I'm doing like 70 hours a week worth of stuff right now, and it's just kind of a pain. Anyways, this is a Hearthstone podcast. We want to talk about Hearthstone. JR, I believe you have a quick announcement, though.
Right. So thanks for reminding me. I almost forgot. But
you're welcome.
Casey Firesides, we're having BlizzPro is sponsoring the next Kansas City Fireside Gathering on June 17th. Here in Kansas City at the Boulevard Brewery. It's a 21 plus event. So free drinks basically free as in you have to pay $25 to get into the event. But I will be there. We're going to try to get John and Tannen to be there. We'll see how that goes. And so if you want to go, definitely go check out kcfiresides.com. and go to the event listing and buy a ticket there. We need to get like 70 people to sign up because this venue costs us about like, I think around $3,000. So the ticket price goes to the venue, basically. And then more out of our pockets. So definitely come check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be our biggest fireside gathering we've had.
I'm excited. I'm looking at flights this week. I think tomorrow or Wednesday, and hopefully Same. We can make it work. Fly in and have a good time. So
yeah, and hey, if you guys show up, we're definitely going to try to do like a live PvP there.
Bring my little. Like can I bring my little soundboard? PvP. Just be up here and be like, sure.
They have a sound system, so we can totally do something.
Player versus player.
Yes, oh, I love that sound. I am all about it. Okay, I'll just be like the weird, creepy guy in the back with like a little soundboard. Be like, yes, let's go. Anyways, yeah. All right, cool. So that's June 17th. Head over to kcfiresides.com to find out more. Let's go into the news.
This Week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
Can I just say I was streaming earlier this week and somebody popped into my stream and be like, hey, I've listened to the podcast for a long time. I just finally figured, hey, I should go check out the stream. You look way different than I expected you to. So I'm like, well, how did you expect me to look? And he goes, honestly, like, older, middle-aged, balding, or completely bald. And so I forgot the name of who that was, but thank you for that. Self-esteem
went through the roof. So about that, John, when you entered to be on Well Met, you know, did an audition, I basically had the same thought. So
really?
No, I'm just joking.
I was gonna be like, I have a bald man's voice. That's all right. People expect me to look like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I did expect you to be older, though. I will say that.
That's true. It's the magic of the microphone. People are like, who's that young buck on the microphone? So yeah. Hey. All right. So again, thanks to our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, Corell, and Variatus. Find out more at patreon.com/WMAD podcast. Let's talk about the news. So first, Blizzard China. So this was actually in 2016. China passed a law that said that basically it would make anything, any sort of gambling in video games, you have to have the odds posted publicly. And that includes games like Hearthstone and their card packs. So Blizzard Hearthstone this week released the Hearthstone card pack rarity odds. And it's not as juicy as you would think. At least one rare or better in every pack. Epic, an average of one of every five packs. And legendary, an average of one in every 20 packs. And then everybody says, well, I average like 37 packs. So what the heck, Blizzard? And keep in mind, we don't know if these servers are any different. So I find it highly unlikely, yet worth noting, that Blizzard could have different pack rates for different servers, but it's highly unlikely. JR, what did you make out of this? Anything exciting, thrilling, anything juicy that we're missing here? Is it just meh?
I mean, these basically line up with the pity timers, right? That we talked about like a year ago or so. They comes out to, yeah, you get a legendary out of one average out of every 20 packs. That's because you're guaranteed a legendary one out of every 40 packs, right? So the average is going to be at that point 20. So it was numbers that didn't surprise me at all because it's information that people have gathered over time by themselves by doing looking at packs and running simulations and things like that. So this seems to run in line with what people found.
Yeah. We've basically had this information for a while, don't you think, Tannen?
Yeah, I mean, like, the one rare in every pack, obviously, we've had that information. The Epic, this feels right. You know, like, it feels about the exact number that you would just from opening enough packs. So you've kind of had this information. The one in every 20, I can believe it and maybe believe that it's the same on our servers. But personally, my personal experience is nowhere near that. I'm upwards of 80 something packs in Angoro now, and I've only opened two legendaries, and they're the same one. They're both Himid. And I'm keeping both of those in my account right now, by the way. We're not dusting those Himids just yet. I want to see how many I can get before I'm done with Angoro. So it's like you with your Murloc quest. It's a badge of honor at this point. And I'm hoping I don't open any more legendaries. I think I told you guys I've spent something like 15,000 dust or something when this sets out.
Really?
So, yeah, I don't know if I believe these numbers because in my personal experience, it's something like one in every 60 packs. So
let's talk about anecdotal evidence for a second. Yeah, it's weird. I wish they would have given a gold card probabilities in this one. I'm surprised I didn't have to.
But I feel like I get a lot of golden cards and I get a lot of epics. Like I feel like it's more like 1.4, one in four packs for me for epics, you know, like a little more than one in five, but the legendary definitely feels less to me.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I think I was more excited about the other games that Blizzard has on getting information than I was with Hearthstone because they also had to release info about heroes, loot boxes, and Overwatch. And I found that to be more interesting because there was less out there about it because Hearthstone was already pretty well known.
Right. Totally agree with that. So that's it. Pretty interesting, but ultimately that's all there is to it. Nothing too huge and extravagant. There's no like shady dealings going on. I was hoping for some drama on Reddit, you know, to get me through my slow work week. I didn't get any of that. So hey,
there's always drama on Reddit, though.
It's true.
Found it elsewhere.
There's always something. This week, the drama was a YouTuber who did a giveaway, and then a guy made a fake account and tried to like totally screw over this YouTuber and said that he never gave him his stuff, and he had all the proof that he did it. It was awesome. Anyways, let's talk about this next piece here. So we did actually HearthstoneReplay.net, HSReplay.net. Every once in a while, they come out with a pretty cool article talking about, you know, something statistical about Hearthstone and what's going on with the game. And this week, they actually came out with a Gadget Sand versus Angoro meta analysis, analyzing the speed of the different metas between 7.0, which is Gadget Sand launch, 7.1, which is the changes, right? That's when the changes went live. And then 8.0, which was Journey to Angoro. Now, you're going to be probably pretty surprised to find that, believe it or not, statistically speaking, from the statistics that HearthstoneReplay.net has, the meta is faster now than it was in Gadget Sand. And we're going to break down a little bit more from that. But JR, for you first, does this feel right? Do you feel like this is a faster game than it was 3 months ago?
I think so, absolutely, for one reason. Reno. Reno rotates out. The games become faster just solely because of that.
Sure. What do you think, Tannen? Are you kind of in the same boat there? Because honestly, for me, it didn't. I'm like, I don't feel like I'm dying turn four to Aggro Shaman anymore.
See, like, it's a thing. I completely agree with JR, but I feel like the game is less decided in the first three games than it has been, first three turns than it has been in the past. Like, prior metas when it had something like Totem Golem and, you know, some cards like that have rotated out, the game was decided by turn three, or it was decided immediately on turn six, whether there was Reno or not. And sometimes you'd play out a few more turns, but the game's already over. Like, you know you're going to die, but you might as well take your 5% chance to win from that point. Now, when you get to play Hearthstone, unless someone gets, like, you know, the bonkers Murloc curve on you or whatever, your game usually isn't decided by, you know, turn three like it was before. So you actually play out more turns. You get to actually play out more turns, but it isn't decided right away. So it's like this weird feeling. You feel like the game is at a different pace than it actually is, but I gotta agree with JR here. It actually does feel like it's a little bit faster to me.
And I think it's because, like, it's solely because Arena, like, control decks now have to focus on beating you by turn 10
Yeah, they have to turn a corner.
Yeah, they have to play that whole mid-range hunter deal where you got to know when to flip the switch on and start pressuring your opponent. And controlled decks before that were solely basically relied on, I'm going to play this out as long as I can, hit Reno or whatever, and play to fatigue and win that way. You no longer play to fatigue in your control matchups right now. Like that seems like it very rarely happens. And just because of that, I think that speeds up the game. Whereas aggro decks might still win by turn four, you know, Pirate Warrior might still win very early, and that's still going to happen. But it's the control meta that's sped up.
Right.
Yeah. I think another thing that's like sped the game up too is the inclusion of quests, especially Quest Rogue. You know, you feel like you're against this clock, right? Every time, this is what I find not fun about playing a set deck, is you feel like it's the same thing for the first few turns of the game, and then you're waiting for the quest to happen on turn four or five, you know, depending if they have a prep or not. And that speeds games up quite a bit. Like, that deck is really fast, and people usually concede pretty early too. You know, once the quest has happened, they're like, I just can no longer win, so this game is over. So there's a lot of games that end very quickly because of that, and Pirate Warrior, like JR was saying. So I think Quest Rogue is a big part of this as well.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I guess I was on the other side of this. I did not feel at all like the meta was any faster because of exactly what JR just said. The control decks got faster. The aggro decks really haven't changed. Maybe got a little bit slower depending on, like, well, obviously Shaman got significantly slower and stopped getting played almost completely, but that's another story. You know, so you've got like that piece, of course, Reno being gone there. I can't remember if it was Matt Place or Mike Donay, but they did an interview and talked about how they didn't like control, meaning fatigue, and how decks best navigate fatigue. They wanted it to go late into the game, but that fatigue should not be a normal thing. And so I think they've done a really good job at that, keeping those control decks within the bounds of, you know, 30 card decks and whatever you can draw kind of in between, but not so fast that it's, you know, muddying the lines between mid range and control, if that makes sense. And I think something to note too is that decks are, for the most part, there are some exceptions like Quest Rogue, Pirate Warrior. Decks are decided less by early game draw. You know by turn two or three when you lose to an aggro shaman or a Pirate Rogue or a Pirate Warrior. But you don't necessarily know when it's a Burn Mage or when it's a mid-range hunter. They might just draw dead or Murloc Paladin, all that kind of stuff where they're faster decks for sure, but you've got your hope isn't sucked out of you by turn three, I guess, is kind of how it feels. So that was pretty interesting overall. Any other big takeaways that you guys took away from this article here?
I mean, not from this article, but I wanted to make a comment that I actually got in an argument with someone on Reddit this week. Is control, I want to say, like, the thing about I think people's misperception about control decks is that control decks have to be slow. Like, yeah, it has to slow down the game, when that's not really the purpose of control. Like, control doesn't mean slow. It doesn't mean taking forever to win the game. Control means that you are reacting to your opponent and controlling the game. So in response, that could turn out to slower games. I want to use like Magic the Gathering as an example because John loves it when I mention that. But control decks in that game doesn't mean you're going to play a long game. In fact, in Magic, if you draw out of your deck, you lose the game. So you don't want to get to the point where you draw out of your deck. In Hearthstone, of course, you know, you go to fatigue or whatever. So the whole purpose of control in that one is to just win the game as fast as you can with reacting to your opponent. It's just one of those things where I think the Hearthstone team is trying to speed up those control decks and make control more viable. And then the way that you do that is by allowing control to be able to handle aggressive decks sooner. And I think that's the big takeaway with Un'Goro is the team has started allowing control decks to take care of these aggressive decks quicker.
For me, overall, I think the thing I took away the most from the article, they made a really good, it's one of the last paragraphs in the article, they made a really good argument about how pretty much everything has gotten faster in this in 2017, this new set. You saw, like, Druid is no longer, or almost no longer mid-range Druid or ramp Druid. It's, you know, you do see Jade Druid, you see the token archetype, which is generally trying to win games before, you know, turn six and stuff like that. Hunter got a lot better. That's usually almost always extremely fast. The mage decks moved away from defensive Reno decks, which, you know, often went to fatigue or super late into the game. Now they're trying to kill you by pyroblasting you on turn 9 or 10, you know, just to kill you as quickly as possible. Like, they're defensive while being aggressive. You know what I mean? They're like, you know, setting up ice blocks so they can live through a turn to just hurl fireballs at your face. You're seeing, like, even the control paladin decks have this, like, Murloc core involved in it that they, if they curve out on turns 1, 2, and 3, you're just dead. Like, and this is a control deck, you know, and like, so you can't keep up with this stuff. You don't longer have, like, anything can happen going on in paladins. So you're not waiting for a 10 mana card to finish the game. You know, we mentioned Quest Rogue. You know, there's no more Zoo, but I mean, like, Warlock's not a relevant class at all right now. We'll get to that later in the show. So overall, if you really think about it, pretty much every class super sped up. And it all comes down to, you know, the set that we have, and the other point that GR made, which hits it right on the head, is there's no more Reno.
Cool. I don't agree. I'm gonna be completely honest here. I don't agree that everything is sped up. I just don't. I don't think aggro decks have gotten faster. I think other decks, like Warrior, for example, Warrior was way faster in Gadgetzan than it is now in Un'Goro, because it had a whole new archetype introduced that people started playing. If they broke this up by archetype, this Warrior class thing, I guarantee you that you would see, well, you can actually kind of see it here. You see about the exact same number of games won by turn, like 2, 3, and 4, now as you did back in November or December, whenever we saw Gadgetzan.
And that kind of makes sense, right? Because, like, while you didn't have Reno Warrior decks, you did have, like, the control Warrior deck, like the true control Warrior deck, you know, with, like, Grom and Elise trying to finish the game and then just grind you out. We don't have that deck anymore, but we have Taunt Warrior. So, like, you still have, like, the aggressive Warrior deck in the Pirate variant, and you still have, like, the other end of the spectrum as well. So it kind of makes sense that that would about, you know, stay about even. So I can agree with you there. But I just don't understand how do you not get that the whole thing is sped up? Like, it's true.
It's not like the whole thing is sped up. It implies that, like, your fast games got faster. And that's not necessarily true. It's your medium length and long length games
that's true.
Got faster. Okay. Your fast games didn't necessarily get faster.
They slowed down, probably.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, according to this data, it's tough to say because they don't break it down by archetype a whole lot. So it's tough to, like, say, and you have to, like, take certain ones with Reno classes like Priest and Mage and Warlock. They got way faster, like entire turns faster. But if you look at the meta overall, the difference between 7.0 when Gadgetzan just launched and 8.0 right now, you're talking a difference of about a turn across the entire spectrum of the meta, which is a big deal. Is a big deal, but again, it's like you eliminated one card that basically gave people double the health that they had, and in a way, kind of twice as many cards, in the sense that there was 30 unique cards in a deck, often ones that were discovering and generating new cards. So you have 30 individual cards, and usually are creating about 34, 35 cards if you go all the way through it, at least. And now you don't really have anything like that. You have, like, a versions of Burn Mage is a great example of ones that you're introducing a lot of different new cards into your deck. There's some Quest Mage decks that I've seen, you know, that kind of try to do the same thing, you know, generate those spells that aren't in the deck that were before. So it's, I guess back to my original point, it's, I guess I don't feel as much that the meta has gotten, the meta itself has gotten faster, but it does mean that my control decks or my control games end sooner.
You know, is it because of the fact that mid-range is back and there's less actual true control? Is that why? Because like it feels like possibly like the average game is around the same amount of time, or maybe just like the tiniest bit even more, because like you don't have like the super fast and super fast deck playing each other anymore. You have like the fast deck and like the medium fast deck playing. You know, you no longer have like the super ends of the spectrum here, the highly polarized decks. You don't have as like, you don't have as many like 10 mana finishes anymore. You're not seeing the Zoth decks, like you're not seeing Anything Can Happen, you're not seeing Reno drag the game out an extra like 8 turns. You're seeing decks like get incremental value and advantage on turns 4, 5, 6, and then winning on turns 7, 8, 9, and the game is over, instead of surviving until turn 8, 9, and 10, playing some big kind of combo or gaining, you know, 24 life and then putting the game away 3 turns later.
I think a little bit. I think for sure. I think that definitely ends up being a part of it. I also think a big part of it is too, though, is even like the tier one decks. In Gadget Sand, the meta was win fast or win slow. I hated the Gadget Sand meta. It's you're aggro, or you are uber control, usually in the form of Reno. And those were the two things. You had aggro versus Reno, aggro versus aggro, and Reno versus Reno were kind of like the big three matchups that you dealt with and that you saw from time to time. We're going to talk about this in a second, but Vicious Syndicate up at the legend part of the ladder doesn't even have a tier one because there are so many decks with close win rates. And if you look at those different decks, I want to open it up here so I don't misspeak. If you look at those different decks in tier two, you have Murloc Paladin and Pirate Warrior, which are probably the fastest decks right now. But then you have Secret Mage, Burn Mage, Token Druid. Token Druid's pretty fast. Midrange Paladin, yeah. Taunt Warrior, Crystal Rogue, Aggro Shaman, Silence Priest, Control Paladin, Jade Druid. You have a lot more mid-range style decks at the top. You're seeing a lot more mid-range versus mid-range. We know how those matchups can go. Sometimes those are very tempo-based, and it's whoever gets the first, you know, whoever gets the first 3 turns of the board are good to go. Sometimes, you know, you don't deal with that, right? And they can go into fatigue, and sometimes it's somewhere in the middle. So I think that we just have a lot more balance, in the sense where when I go on the ladder, I'm not expecting, you know, let's say I'm playing, you know, my priest deck, right? My elemental priest deck. I'm playing that deck. I'm not going, okay, I'm either going to play aggro or I'm going to play a really slow deck. I'm like, I could face an entire spectrum. And I think that probably helps as well. So,
yeah. And I think this goes back to what I said at the beginning, though. I think the rise of mid range is solely because of the death of Reno. Like, mid range decks just could not play in a meta with Reno. Because they were just favored, they were so unfavored against any kind of Reno deck that they couldn't thrive in that meta. And with Reno gone, midrange is back and it's strong.
Yeah, I agree. Anyways, that's went on a little bit of a rant there. So let's go ahead and jump in really quick. Esports, we're not going to go too deep into it, but a big congratulations to Shoop on winning DreamHack Austin, $7,500, 15 HCT points. Very interesting, though. Trump, Reynad take 3rd and 4th, and Tempo Storm had 4 players in the top 16. So Tempo Storm, quite a showing there. Congrats to everybody who participated and did well there. And let's jump into the meta.
Beat 'em or join 'em.
Cool. All right. So we already have kind of totally torn this open. So let's talk about the Vicious Syndicate Data Reaper report for a second. JR, you want to give us the highlights of this report here?
So the big takeaway to me from the, and I always have a problem like reading this, to be honest, like the Vicious Syndicate report. I always have a problem, like, kind of figuring out what's going on here as far as, like, the way that they have everything sorted. Sorry, these guys are talking in Skype chat real quick. So
sorry, Tannen had to leave for an emergency, a family emergency. So we were trying to coordinate all that. So sorry, it's going to be just JR and I for the rest of the show. So we're not cutting Tannen out for you audio listeners. We're just us now, I guess. All right, sorry. Back to it.
No, but the biggest takeaway for me on the Vicious Syndicate report is Paladin kind of is the best right now, right? Like, but it's not like way far ahead or anything like that, as John alluded to earlier in the show. You know, especially at Legend rank, there's not a tier one, because everything is like you're looking at 12 decks that are between 50 to 52% win rate, which is crazy. I mean, that's crazy. But once again, you know, like you're seeing Murloc Paladin, Midrange Paladin, Pirate Warrior, as you know, the top three, basically, and that's kind of what you're seeing in ladder as well, in my opinion. But then you're starting to see some variations of mages. You're still seeing Taunt Warrior up there, but not like tier one level anymore. It's kind of dropped a little bit. And I think and this is kind of like, we'll get into this with Tempo Storm, but I think they also kind of undervalue, Quest Rogue a bit, because Quest Rogue is one of those decks that feels a lot like, and I've had arguments about this one way or the other in the past now, where I've leaned one way and then went the other. But it feels like Patron Warrior, where it's one of those decks that if you are skilled at it and know how to play it, it is an extremely good deck and you're going to have a very high win rate with it. And I even had this argument with John, I think, because he was getting like a 70% win rate with it. And I wasn't getting that good of a one.
Get good scrub.
But it just comes down to how you pilot the deck and how you understand the deck. And it's a very highly skilled level deck in knowing your matchups. And a highly skilled player is going to play that deck a lot better, like enormously better than someone who's not. So when you're looking at rank 1 through 5 or rank 5 and below Quest Rogue, even though it's an extremely good deck, it's going to have a lot lower win rate. Because of the people piloting it aren't as good as the people at the top level.
Yeah.
It's still a good deck. It's just more difficult to play. And I think you see the same thing with Miracle Rogue. Miracle Rogue is also very similar in that regard.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I want to get your thought on something. We've revisited this conversation multiple times on this show, but we actually had a really great conversation. I talked with Ridiculous Hat in Cinder Ascendant on this. And it's that age old thing. Data from Vicious Syndicate Data Reaper report versus basically the expert opinions in datas from top tier players in their respective classes on Tempo Storm. And I've about, you know, just lost my mind, because for me, I've always kind of stood at the fact that both have a great place in Hearthstone meta reports. I think they both have their place, but I've noticed more and more and more that people are like, well, Vicious Syndicate has thousands of games worth of data, so therefore is better. And I personally feel like that's false. That's false. I don't think that a bunch of people. So JR, if you had your Trackobot on when you were playing Quest Rogue, right? And you had let's say you had a 30% win rate. I had a 70% win rate. We played the same amount of games. Guess what that win rate is? It's 50%. Right? And so you have to like go and be like, well, that's someone playing really well and someone playing not well. Is that the same as what, you know, somebody who pilots the deck well and how you should feel you pilot the deck? Is that is that all that matters? Is, oh, I'm an average player, therefore give me the average center of the bell curve for a win rate. I've always been like, if you pilot a deck well, use Tempo Storm's snapshot and use Tempo Storm's win rates. Because if you pilot it well, chances are you're going to get numbers similar to a deck specialist. For example, mid-range shaman, I think it was Aggro Shaman on the Data Reaper report, had like a 48% win rate or something like that. It was against Reno Warlock. It was like one of the worst, according to the data, was one of the worst matchups that you had as Aggro Shaman was Reno Warlock. Sat down and was chatting with Ray C, and he's like, no way, I crush Reno Warlock 70% of the time. And it's very simple, but it's one unintuitive thing. And it's make sure you've got a 4-mana 7/7 to play on turn 4. Then we saw Blast Crystal Potion, but that's something different. And I was just like, see, without Tempo Storm telling me that's what those win rates should be, Ray's information he was giving me aligned almost exactly with Tempo Storm. And, you know, the win rates that I saw, again, playing decks that I didn't play very well, almost aligned exactly with Vicious Syndicate, their Data Reaper report. So, JR, to you, where do you think that these meta reports belong? Are they contrasting? Are they complementary? Do they address different things? What do you think?
For me, like, I think they both hold a place for different reasons. One is Tempo Storm feels like it's more geared towards not only ladder play, but also high level play, because you got people that you have people that are hitting multi-legend that are kind of running this thing, right? So they're vetting these decks out at a very high level of play, in my opinion, and going by what they are seeing. What I like about the Data Reaper report is you kind of get the whole picture, because you can kind of divide it up into what is going on at Legend, what is going on between rank 1 and rank 5, and what is going on rank 5 to all the ranks, basically, right? So you can kind of make your decisions based on that. Like, if you want to run a meta deck, or knowing what to run against the meta, you know, beat them or join them, then I think Data Reaper is better in that regard. But if you're looking for a deck that you really want to pilot, and you know a certain you know a class really well, like I really grabbed on to Burn Mage and ran that extremely well. Tempo Storm only has, and both Tempo Storm and Data Reaper have that at tier 2. But if I was in charge of meta ranks, and I was on, you know, the Tempo Storm team for some reason, I would have ranked Burn Mage as a tier 1 deck. Because that was my experience with it and experience playing against it. It seems like a very, very solid deck that deserves to be a top 1 deck. So I think they're both valuable in that regard, because it's good to have those high level player opinions within your data, because Hearthstone isn't just, you know, a computer telling me what to do. It's also knowing what are the optimal plays, because I am not a computer, and I am not going to make the most optimal plays in Hearthstone. So I need to kind of go off of an opinion of other people that are piloting this deck. Yeah, they're piloting it better than I am, but I feel like I can do pretty close to that.
Yeah. That's how I survived. Back when I would have considered myself a Druid player before Mean Streets of Gadgets and basically before the Savage Roar nerf. I loved playing mid-range Druid and combo Druid, aggro Druid. That was all a lot of fun for me. That was what I clicked with the most, and was the most fun deck for me to play. So when I took win rates, I took that from Tempo Storm. And I still would today. I would take those because I'm going to pilot them closer to that. In like Burn Mage. I don't get Burn Mage, man. I don't understand it. I can't figure out what that deck's goal is except for mashing a bunch of annoying cards in one deck. And so, you know, like I'm probably going to see closer to the Data Reaper report. The one thing I have noticed is that Tempo Storm, the biggest discrepancies aren't in the win rates between easier to pilot decks. The easier and more obvious the deck is to pilot, the more similar the win rates are going to be between the average Vicious Syndicate contributor player, you know, the tens of thousands of games sent through Tracobot, and the high legend player. You're going to see less discrepancies there because it's more obvious. Aggro Shaman would be a great example of that. They always had Aggro Shaman on the top between the two. Sometimes one would put midrange above the other and the other wouldn't, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I get that. But, you know, for the most part, those easier to pilot decks, they end up having a lot less discrepancies in the data. Whereas a great example in this week is we have Miracle Rogue is down bottom of tier 3, 48% win percentage here, whereas Tempo Storm, I believe, has it as the seventh best deck in the meta. And we've talked about in harps on the Miracle Rogue as just being one of those decks where who knows if it'll ever be bad. As long as Gadget Sand lives and you have the ability to cast, you know, almost 10 plus cards in a turn, like you might.
Oh, Gadget Sand and Preparation.
Like, Prep is
the big card for Rogue. Backstab, yep. Yeah. All those zero cost
Phantom Knives, you know, Rogue has. There's a lot of those staples for sure. And you see such a big discrepancy, and we got into this conversation and it was like, that there's no way that can be right. I play Tempo Storm has it as Control Mage, but we're going to call it Burn Mage. I play Burn Mage and I crush Miracle Rogue. Why is it that this is so much better? And I'm like, well, look at the win rates and then look at the representation on the ladder. You know, so like Miracle Rogue, what you see, Midrange Hunter, 60% win rate. One of the, if not the most popular deck archetype overall, it's got a 60% win rate. This control is 45%. Does better against one of the most popular decks. Even if it doesn't beat this deck all the time, doesn't mean that it's bad. You know, it's a 55% win rate is what Tempo Storm has Burn Mage against Miracle Rogue. You look at those things, and that's where that's how I like to use the Data Reaper report. That's honestly, I don't pay a lot of attention to win rates unless it's a brand new deck. This is what I should be looking for as a base. And what I typically do is I go and I look, okay, I'm at rank 10. What's the class representation at rank 10? What's the deck archetype representation at rank 10? Oh, it's 25%. Quest Rogue and Aggro Druid. Cool. Well, Burn Mage should have about a 60% win rate against those two. I'm taking that, and I got that from Tempo Storm. I'm taking that with me, and I'm going to, that's what I'm going to run. Is like, I don't know. I don't see why people put them at such an odds. Like, I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you're only loyal to one over the other. If that makes sense.
And I don't understand why people would do that either. I mean, data is data, right? Whether you get it from one source, like you would rather have more sources. I would rather have more, even more meta reports than this. Just to have more stuff, you know. These meta reports are something like, and I want to go back to something that someone in the chat said. Stub 20 said, I wish neither meta report existed sometimes, because then the meta would evolve more naturally instead of everyone net decking 2 weeks into the new meta. And that is the question on what evolves what? Does the meta evolve the meta reports, or does the meta reports evolve the meta? That is the age old question. But the thing is, like, people are going to get this information one way or the other. Like, whether it's through these meta reports, which are out here now, or through tournament results. They see tournament results and they see that Trump brought, you know, these four decks and won, you know, some big tournament. People are going to start playing those decks in the ladder, and that's going to control the meta. People are going to play what the higher level players are playing and being successful with, and they're going to play the same. And whether this information comes from meta reports or tournament reports or anything like that, just keep in mind, like, what is actually evolving the meta, I believe, is not the meta reports themselves, but the professionals that are putting these decks together and having success with them and being seen. And that's what makes them popular.
Yeah.
I kind of went off on a tangent there. I'm sorry.
No,
but it was something that I saw that I definitely wanted to respond to.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great point, right? Is, you know, where do those lie? What is the importance of, you know, the meta reports? Would it be more free flowing? Would it be, you know, there, or would it just give the haves more disparity than the haves nots? Because, you know, the other side of it is okay, now let's say, you know, we have no meta reports. So how we get our decks, like, let's say it's illegal in the United States, it is illegal to post Hearthstone deck lists online. People meet underground.
I'd be in jail.
Yeah.
I'd be
People
in jail.
Meet underground in deck sharing caverns just to share their new Hearthstone decks. Right. So we're in this radio silent world where basically all we can do is create our own decks and see what other people play on the ladder. And sure, in a perfect world, like, that sounds pretty, pretty neat. But honestly, what I think it ends up doing and introduces is, well, JR and I, we do a podcast together. So we get on an encrypted iMessage, you know, thing. We start sharing some deck lists and start talking about the other things we see. We invite some more friends into there. Now we have these little clicks. And so random guy listening to the podcast or just plays on his iPhone doesn't have access to those resources now. And now just really doesn't know where to start, how to win. And then you kind of create almost a bigger issue than it is now. Sure, the decks are less creative. Everything feels optimized, and the top 1% create the decks, distribute the information about those decks, and us other 99%ers, you know, find those popular decks. And maybe if you're bold and daring, you change a couple of cards in there, make it your own. It's like, oh, I have my own version of Freeze Mage, but I added in an extra arcane intellect and took out a Frostbolt. Oh, like you're some genius mastermind here. And
hey, don't quit making fun of me.
That was my best JR impression. Hey, I'm JR Cook. Look at me. Go Royals. And so it does introduce the opposite problem, or the same problem, maybe even more so, where you all of a sudden are just that the best players control the meta completely to go from there. So,
but here's the thing. We already actually live in that world. If you think about it, like, the people listening to this podcast, the people reading Reddit, the people who are going to TempoStorm, or the people watching these streams and getting these deck lists and playing these competitive decks are actually, if you think about it, a very small portion of Hearthstone players. Like, Hearthstone players as a whole, like, there are, what, 70 million people that have Hearthstone accounts, whether they're active or not is, you know, something else. But you're talking about a group of people that, you know, there's only, what, 10,000, 15,000 people in North America that hit Legend. So if you add that to EU and China, you're talking about, what, maybe I can't do math.
Let's
right
just
now
go high and say 50,000.
Let's just go 50 to even 100,000. Even if you say 100,000. And then, you know, you go up to rank 5 and maybe there's 350,000. You go up to rank 10, maybe you're looking at 1 million. You know, from legend to rank 10. There's still 60 million people that aren't hitting that. And maybe it's because and one of the ways that you can get better is by looking at these deck lists that people are playing and learning how to play them and making your game better because of that. So there's a lot of players in Hearthstone that aren't doing that, that aren't listening to these podcasts, that aren't, you know, getting this information. So it's one of those things where we already actually live in that world. Like, there are people out there that just want to make their own decks, play one or two games while they're on the toilet, and call it a day. And that's okay. That's what this game was designed for.
I get it. So I guess I would love to know how many players at like rank 10 and above don't frequent a forum, have a group, some sort of group chat, listen to podcasts, or check for content creation, whether it's through YouTube, Meta Reports, or whatever. I would be willing to bet that like something like 75% of them have accessed one of those things within the last month, let's say. And it's impossible to know, right? So we're kind of debating hypotheticals here, which I'm okay with. And it's very interesting, right? Because we've always talked about, you know, Hearthstone, was it just 70 million players that they just followed or they just passed?
I want to say that was the number. I'm not 100% sure, but it
sounds
right.
We had it on last week's show notes.
We did.
70 million players. So 70 million players, let's say. And isn't like rank like 12, the top 50%? Something like that?
I thought it was rank 15, to be honest.
So, I mean,
but you might be right.
It's
in that area.
It's relatively low, right? So let's just take rank 15 and above. We're already down to 35 million players, right? How many of those 35 million players aren't accessing those types of, you know, data reports and podcasts and, I mean, honestly, watching streams? Look at this. You go online and at any point in time, there's usually about 50,000 people watching Hearthstone. And it's tough for me. Like, I don't want to say that people who are playing Hearthstone are one percenters or anything like that, or that there's anything like that. I would venture to say that 50% of people, this would be my sweeping generalization statement. I would say 50%. I would say 35 million Hearthstone players regularly access some form of Hearthstone content that augments their ability to play the game better. Whether that's searching online for deck lists, watching streams, listening to podcasts, accessing meta reports. I would say 50%.
And that number seems high to me. Like, I would venture to guess 25%.
I am in Colorado right now, so you might be right.
Ba-dum-bum. But no, I like that number. Like, I like even 10%. Like, I don't know, 10 to 25% feels like it would be the number. But this is, you know, I don't. There's no way to know, right? There's no way to know. It's just it just feels like there are a lot of casual players that just hop on to play and don't care about making, you know, themselves better at the game. They just like, maybe they like just opening packs. Maybe they don't even play ranked. Maybe they just sit in casual. Maybe they just want to go play Yogg-Saron all day long because that's the only legendary that they've opened.
Yeah.
And they think the card effect is cool.
Totally. So I totally get where you're at. And again, the numbers, like, please don't send me emails why you think a number is different than what we speculated here on the show. We're just speculating for hypothetical debate here.
We didn't even have this. Yeah, we didn't even have this conversation.
Didn't even have this on air. It's just like, cool, about 50%. I mean, I'm like, I don't know. Freshka says he knows at least four people who don't Google or do anything. I'm like, I know zero who play Hearthstone, including my friends who I used to work with, who, you know, would come in and be like, so John, I found this really cool warlock deck that kills yourself by rank 7. And it's really good. I'm doing pretty good against the innkeeper on that.
I know at least 6 people at work that don't even bother like looking anything up. Like they'll come talk to me and ask me
that counts.
If I think this is a good deck or not.
That counts. So. Anyways, we've got an email, then we've got to get out of here. Let's jump into this email here.
We've got mail.
So we do have mail this week. If you want, if you have some ideas, questions, comments about the show, want to hear us talk about them on the show, minus how many people you think look at outside sources for Hearthstone, email us at wellmet@bluespro.com. I'm pretty good at responding to all of them, and I do my best to do that. So we love to hear from you guys. We got this one from Justin H. He says this. Hi. Hi. I hit Legend for the first time in April. Felt pretty good. Congrats, man. Great job. Then I get on Reddit and other Hearthstone-related pages. So not a 20% or 50% or whatever. Goes to other related pages. And I see what feels like an abnormally large amount of posts from people who hit Legend for the first time as well. Question is hitting Legend easier in Un'Goro because JR did it? Question mark. I'm just kidding. I added that part. Is it because of the first month of the new expansion makes it easier? Could rank floors be another reason? Or is it like when you buy a new car and all of a sudden you see this, all you see is the same car everywhere else? P.S. I don't feel bad about hitting Legend despite the way my first couple of sentences may have sounded. Thanks, Justin. So what do you think, JR? Did we see an abnormal amount of people hit Legend this last month and why?
There was a lot of first-time Legend people, like, just on our Facebook group alone, right? So I think it's a combination of two things. I think ranked floors really helped as one of the reasons why you probably have felt like you've seen more Legend players. I'm not sure, like, we don't have the numbers to know if there were more Legend players than normal, right? But I do feel like there were. But ranked floors, like, for example, when I went to Legend last month, I hit a wall at rank 5, where I was trying to figure out what deck was really working in the meta right then. And if it wasn't for the rank floor at that point, I probably would have fallen to like rank 9 or 10 many, many times within that grind. And I may not have made that final grind from rank 5 to Legend because of that. So for me, I feel like ranked floors really helped me last month.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, with the new set, I think people have been playing a lot more. And we've always said, like, hitting Legend isn't so much about playing good and hitting Legend right off the bat. It's about investing the time and keeping a solid win rate for that time invested. The higher your win rate, the quicker you're going to hit Legend. But if you are above, if you are around a 60% win rate, you are going to hit Legend eventually, or even above like 55% win rate, even above 50% win rate. You are going to hit Legend eventually. It's just going to take you longer to get there. Right. So people are playing. I feel like people were playing a lot more last month, and that's why you were seeing more people hit Legend, because people were investing more time into the game.
That's an interesting thought. I didn't think about just more people playing and being excited about playing the game. So personally, again, anecdotally, I guess, I feel, yes, a lot of people hit Legend that month. I remember about like 7 or 8 days before the season ended, there was a Reddit thread. Like, I just hit Legend and I'm like number 17,000 or something like that. And you normally don't see so many Legend players, especially that early in the month. I think ranked floors absolutely had something to do with that. That rank 5 boss is a B. And we've all gone on this show. We've all gone from rank 5 to rank 9. We've all done it. Now you don't have to do that. The second thing it lets you do is it lets you, I think of rank 10 to 15, 5 to 10, and 5-1 and Legend as almost their own little separate ladders. Ranked floors essentially ensures that. And one of the biggest pieces of advice is that you get when you're going for Legend is stick with one deck, stick with the single deck, because you're going to be the strongest with it. And probably the amount of time and games and effort and curve it takes to learn a new deck probably isn't worth the amount of games and stars that you're going to lose. Now, once you're at rank 5, you can play around with that deck for a little bit. You can go, you know what? It really says that this deck should be better here. So I'm going to change. And I can lose as many games as I want at this rank, and I'll still be rank 5, right? And so I think that absolutely has to do with it. And I also think there is just kind of an extra opportunity there. And kind of goes back to our earlier conversation of people who tend to invest time and effort into the meta reports, into podcasts, into watching Twitch, probably have a better grasp on what's going on with the game outside of the game, right? It's how I stay up to date all the time. And so for somebody, it basically just created an opportunity for people who wanted to invest the time and effort out of game and in game to make that happen. So I think it's a little bit of all of those things.
I have one more idea that it could be, and it could be the introduction of quests on giving people an archetype or a deck idea to build off of, and right out of the gate. And it helped that Quest Rogue and Taunt Warrior, and to an extent even the Murloc Shaman,
sure,
were vastly popular on helping people rank up very quickly. So those decks were kind of built in, quote unquote, because Blizzard had these ideas, especially with like a set rotating out, or you know, a bunch of sets rotating out, that it gave people a starting point to begin with. And two of those decks were top tiers.
Yeah.
So that probably helped as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that 110%, I think. So yeah, so that's what I would say. Justin, thanks for your email. I hope we did an okay job answering it for you. But that's about all I would have to say about that. And JR, I think we're done. We're ending a little bit about 5 minutes early. Basically, Tannin time is basically what we're missing. A little bit of Tannin time. And we would have been all right. But hey, thank you all so much for hanging out for episode 108 of Well Met. Hope you enjoyed the show. Let's jump in first. JR, I'm actually going to do iTunes reviews. I just updated it now because we got a lot of changes with Patreon, and I need to put those names in really quick. But what's going on in iTunes reviews?
Yeah, so in iTunes review, we have one 5-star review in the USA from Suju Ninja. That's how it's pronounced.
I think he's in the chat.
He is in the chat. I think he talked to me earlier this week too, in fact.
Cool.
Thanks so much for that 5-star review. It's very appreciated. In fact, these 5-star reviews do something that gets those people that don't like take in this Hearthstone content creation to be able to find us on iTunes to start learning about Hearthstone more. So it's a good way to get in touch with those 35 million Hearthstone players that aren't seeking out this information. We appreciate it a lot. Just if you'd like to give us a 5-star review, just head over to iTunes, go to podcasts, type in Hearthstone. You'll find us. Very easy. And I'll mispronounce the name next week, or maybe pronounce the name correctly. Either way.
That's what I like. Please forgive me. The Patreon website isn't loading, so I'm going off of my email notifications for Patreon. But Patreon, we do have a Patreon, and any little bit you can give helps us create this free hour to hour and 20 minute weekly content for you. you can head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast to find out more about it. And a big thanks to our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, Corel, and Variatus. Thank you so much, so much for your support of the show. This week, we do want to welcome Dan H, Christopher G, Griffin M, and Justin H. Thank you so much for your support of the show. And I talked about those changes before, going on a per episode basis. So that'll make it a little bit more fair. And last but not least, like I said before, any little bit, a cup of coffee a month, $3 a month, $5 a month, anything that you think is worth, means the world to us, that you would want to give and be a part of our little WellMet family. So again, patreon.com/WellMetPodcast. Find out how you can get involved. Let's go ahead.
And $1, $1 gets you in our Facebook group, and that is a great resource, in my opinion.
Our Facebook group is fire. It is fire. And I think it's in the message, but if you are a patron and you aren't in our Patreon group, just look for WellMet on Facebook and ask to join. I verify your name, and boom, you're in. So, cool. All right, let's do shout-outs for the week and where people can find you. JR, you're up first.
People can find me over at Eldorian. And as far as shout-outs, I'm going to give a shout-out to this week to Sam Benson over at KC Firesides. Working with him this last week on BlizzPro sponsoring his Fireside here next June. The dude is just amazing to work with. And it's going to be an awesome event. And I hope to see a bunch of you out there June 17th.
Cool. I really hope that I can be out there. I hope you can too. I'm going to have some amazing news to announce on the show next week. I'm really excited to share it all with you. But as for me, you can find me everywhere at Kick Tripod, primarily twitch.tv/kicktripod. We've been having a blast. I don't stream a lot of Hearthstone there. I'm streaming a lot of Overwatch and Destiny there right now, but I still think it's a really good time. We end up talking quite a bit about Hearthstone in between games and stuff like that. I would love it if you'd come and join us. Drop me a follow over at twitch.tv/kicktripod. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thank you for joining us for episode 108 of Well Met. We record live 7 p.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv/blizzpro on Mondays. I really need to rewrite this paragraph. JR, remind me to rewrite this paragraph. You can find more awesome Hearthstone content throughout the week at hearthstone.blizzpro.com, and also tweet us at WellMetPodcast or email us at WellMet@blizzpro.com with comments, questions, and ideas you have for the show. Thanks for tuning in.
Hey,
we'll see you next week. Yeah, what's up?
John, rewrite that paragraph.
Bye, guys.